Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
CannabisRadio.com presents The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, this is great, man. Well, on the
earth. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Monday, October 17th, 2016, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Yes, I'm here. I just had to switch a switch there. The sound is there. We are live. You might have to refresh, although I don't know why I'm saying that, because if you can't hear me, how would that help? But anyway, we are here. We are live and direct in beautiful legal Potland, Oregon. But man, it is stormy outside. We're actually having thunderstorms and lightning out here. And it's pretty rare. We don't usually get it out here in the Pacific Northwest. Too humid. Weather conditions aren't usually right for that. But yeah, we are getting some lightning. And I've been looking out the window here at the condominium tower, watching some lightning strikes. It's been quite a show. So very interesting. This last couple of days, Thursday and Friday, I was up in Vancouver, British Columbia at the International Cannabis Business Conference. You may have heard some of my live shows from there. I haven't yet had the chance to process a lot of the audio from the event, so I'm going to hold off on that. I had tweeted earlier today that I was going to play Brendan Kennedy's keynote address. He's the CEO of Privateer Holdings, the people behind the Marley Natural brand, as well as Canada's Tilray medical marijuana company. I just didn't have the time to get that put together, so we'll save that for tomorrow. But we've got all sorts of great stuff coming up on today's show anyway, because there's a lot of news to get to. We are just 22 days away from Marijuana Election Night 2016, people. We'll be live in Los Angeles, California at the Drug Policy Alliance's Prop 64 watch party. We'll be sending our stream out to various radio and TV stations around the country, and we'll be providing 6 hours of live coverage from time zone to time zone, all 9 states that are voting on statewide initiatives, as well as some of the local votes that'll be happening, particularly the Denver Social Use Initiative that could set an amazing precedent for the rest of the legal states. So that's coming up on election night, Tuesday, November 8th, starting at 3 p.m., running till 9 p.m. Pacific, right here on CannabisRadio.com. On today's show, after our cannabis radio news, we will be getting to a cannabis focus on my home state of Oregon, where investors here are looking at election night and the bans that are up for a vote in various western counties. The eastern counties don't have to vote on it, but the western ones do. That's a long story. We'll tell you about it coming up right after the news. Also on the show today, in drug war data mining, there's a piece from Keith Humphreys up in the Washington Post with looking at 3 things that we could pretty much bet on happening in the United States with the advent of marijuana legalization. We'll take a look at that. Then at half past, we'll be speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our cannabis Q&A, taking your questions at 650-LEGAL-MJ on cannabis science, culture, history, and health. We'll also look at marijuana and sleep. We'll look at whether marijuana affects educational outcomes. A new study on cannabis and Parkinson's disease, another study on cannabis and cervical cancer, another study on cannabis and osteoporosis, and the workplace drug testing statistics are out. We'll ask Dr. Mitch his opinion on those. Then, at the end of our first hour, we'll have time for a radical rant, where I'm taking on TV's quack, Dr. Oz, who's been spreading some junk science trying to discredit marijuana. I picked this up in the Idaho Statesman. And I still get the feed from my birthplace, the red state of Idaho. And I'll be debunking that in the radical rant coming up at the end. Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. Phone line is 650-LEGAL-MJ. We'll talk about Rick Steves making his way to Maine. And the write-in Russ Belville campaign for president starts today. We'll tell you all about it at the end of the second hour. Thanks for joining us. And we're back with the news after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Yeah. earn your PhD in THC monetization with CannabisRadio.com. Don't be late.
The cannabis business industry is growing. Business is booming. And as new opportunities arise in newly legalized states, each market is getting more competitive. Today, it takes more than just being a good grower. Do you have the resources to market and handle this ever-changing business landscape? Let Canna Management Corporation help you grow your canna business with our vast resources and experience to make your business a fully functional service company. Financial management, HR, sales, marketing, efficiency, and more. CMC has the experience and the expertise to improve your business and help you better meet the demands of your clients and customers. Call Canna Management Corporation and let our team get you ready to grow. 415-269-8015. That's 415-269-8015. Or visit canna-management.com.
I'm Radical Russ from the Russ Belleville Show.
We're here with Sir Richard Branson.
Far more damage has been done to people by the current approach.
Jim McMahon, you know, a lot of the coaches are old school. You know, he used to just yell at us, go, oh, you bunch of pot smokers.
John Popper on the telephone.
You know, I think in the 60s, there was that kind of, the bigotry wasn't so concrete.
It's the Russ Belleville Show, the NPR of POT, weekdays live at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, exclusively on CannabisRadio.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belleville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
I am a round peg in a square hole.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
It's time for the Cannabis Radio News. Covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Cannabis Radio News is now available exclusively at CannabisRadio.com. Now your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is Cannabis Radio News.
This is your Cannabis Radio News for Monday, October 17th, 2016. Marijuana dispensaries around Oregon sold more than $160 million worth of recreational marijuana and pot-laced products in the first 9 months of the year, as indicated by sales tax figures released Monday by the State Department of Revenue. The agency received $40.2 million in recreational marijuana sales tax payments from dispensaries between the start of January and the end of September, showing that about $160.8 million worth of recreational pot was sold in Oregon. State-regulated medical marijuana dispensaries selling recreational marijuana charge a 25% sales tax to customers for all flower, edibles, and other marijuana products. This month, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission licensed the first retailers in its recreational marijuana program. The retailers charge a 17% state sales tax for all recreational marijuana products. Dispensaries, which the Oregon Health Authority oversees, must become licensed retailers with the OLCC to continue to sell recreational pot after the start of 2017. Until the end of the year, any dispensaries that have not become retailers will continue to collect a 25% sales tax. Early results from a survey of law enforcement agencies conducted by the Kansas Attorney General suggest legal Colorado marijuana is having a big impact on Kansas, but it may not be all negative. Attorney General Derek Schmidt received responses from 390 Kansas law enforcement agencies and district attorneys, indicating that less marijuana is being confiscated, but it's much higher in potency than the pot smuggled in from Mexico. Survey results also show that the legal system has been swept by changing attitudes about marijuana, with some jurisdictions no longer enforcing pot laws much. When they do, they're finding it tough to win convictions, the Wichita Eagle reported. Some juries are refusing to hand down marijuana convictions. Labette County's prosecutor said several potential jurors have stated during jury selection in non-marijuana cases that they think pot should be legal. Supporters of a referendum to legalize marijuana for recreational use have touted the proposal as applying only to adults 21 and older, but it could actually legalize marijuana for everyone, even children, Maine Attorney General Janet Mills warned. The interpretation by the state's top prosecutor, a Democrat, provided a late gift to marijuana opponents and put referendum supporters on the defensive. Scott Gagnon, who directs anti-legalization group Smart Approach to Marijuana, said the organization will have a new TV and radio ad next week playing up Mills' concerns about kids and pot. Mills said the referendum removes existing legal language that makes possession of small amounts of marijuana a civil infraction for both adults and children. That means there would be no penalties for children who consume or smoke marijuana, she said. A bill legalizing marijuana for Delaware adults is expected to be introduced in January when the General Assembly reconvenes, the Senate Majority Whip said. Senator Margaret Rose Henry, a Democrat from Wilmington, who penned Delaware's medical marijuana bill, said she will propose a bill that would legalize marijuana for Delawareans 21 and older. Henry said the bill has to be sent to the lawyers and she will work on gaining sponsors. According to an analysis from the Marijuana Policy Project, taxing marijuana would generate about $21 million, said Henry, the committee chairwoman. Henry said that she knows she will face a fight and may not get reelected, but, quote, I'm going to do it, end quote. Officials moved to decriminalize marijuana use last year. Now, possessing a small amount of marijuana for private use in Delaware is paid like a traffic ticket and punishable by only a $100 civil fine. A mother in Ohio claims she found an unsavory deep-fried surprise in her 4-year-old daughter's French fry order from Wendy's. Springfield's Desiree Risner said she found weed in the meal after her daughter said the fries, quote, tasted funny and were yucky, end quote, according to a Huber Heights police report. Risner says she then called the restaurant, but a manager reportedly told her that no one at the store had marijuana. Risner proceeded to call the police department and reported the incident. The officer went to the Wendy's location and spoke with the shift manager and 3 employees. 2 of the employees admitted to smoking marijuana, but no weed was found following a search of the restaurant's facilities. This has been your Cannabis Radio News for Monday, October 17th, 2016. I'm Russ Belville.
Forwarding the cause of legalization and research of the growing cannabis industry, one podcast at a time. The Cannabis Radio Network.
Cash?
Sorry.
I don't carry around cash, and I don't want to use the ATM and pay surcharges.
You don't need to carry cash. Haven't you heard about PayQuick?
Okay, tell me about PayQuick.
It's the safe and easy way to pay. It works just like your debit card to securely pay for your purchase, and it gives you rewards points every time you use it.
Nice.
PayQuick, the safe and easy way to pay. PayQuick.com.
Nevada's local leaders are voting yes on 2 to regulate marijuana.
Through this Yes on 2, we're creating a direct line of revenue.
Our schools here in Nevada are so underfunded, this would be a great revenue source to expand and improve upon the educational system.
If you decriminalize it and regulate it and tax it, it's a win-win.
I'm Heidi Swank, and I'm voting yes on question 2.
And I'm voting yes on question 2.
And I'm voting yes on 2.
I'm Kitty Jung, and I'm voting yes on question 2.
You're not high. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Your grapefruits are no match for my Trump Towers.
Okay, maybe you're high, too.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest-growing business association in the fastest-growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our Cannabis Focus.
Today in the Cannabis Focus, we're taking a look at a report in the Seattle Times. This is entitled, Investors Anxious as Oregonians Again Vote on Marijuana.
And what's going on here is the fact that we have so-called dry counties here in Oregon. When our Measure 91 passed, in the initiative, we offered the local control option to cities and counties that might not want to have pot shops or licensed grows or processors or whatever, just the marijuana licensees. Not to ban personal grows or personal possession. Everyone in Oregon can do that. But just to allow these more rural, more conservative counties that are hesitant to get on the bandwagon, the opportunity to ban those licenses. However, we made it explicit in Measure 91 that that ban would have to come through a vote of the people. It only seems reasonable. The thing that happened, though, is after we passed Measure 91, with 56% of the vote, 56.11% to be accurate, the greatest support any state has ever had for legalizing marijuana. After we passed that, the legislators in Eastern Oregon, led by Senator Ted Farrioli, had kind of a revolt in the state legislature and complained about the fact that they'd have to have these votes in their counties to ban licenses. And their rationale was, hey, we just had a vote. We just put it up to a vote. We just had a legalization vote on Measure 91 for pot shops and processors and growers. And our county said no. So why should we have to, in the very next election, have to have another vote to say whether or not we want pot shops and processors and grows? Seems redundant, seems like a waste of money. And we're so obviously against it out here. The votes were so great against 91 that it's obvious we're going to ban it anyway. The vote will turn out anyway as a ban. So why waste the time? Why waste the money? That was their argument. And it was a successful argument because the legislature then crafted this exception. We call it the West Idaho Compromise. I call Eastern Oregon Western Idaho because geographically, politically, economically, religiously, they're pretty much the same state. So east of the Cascade Mountains, it was determined, well, it wasn't determined geographically, it was determined by the vote. The law that was passed said that if your county voted more than 55% against legalization, then you're excused. You don't have to have a vote. You can just ban it through your city council, ban it through your county commission. But if your county voted less than 55% against it, if it was close, or your county voted for it, well, then you have to put it to a vote. Now, I found that to be an unacceptable compromise because the will of the people of the state of Oregon said that there should be the democracy in action said that there should be democracy applied, right? We had a majority of the people, 56%. Again, if 55% is our benchmark here for the counties that should be able to ban, how come it's not a benchmark for the state to say they can't ban? But they got this thing through, so if your county voted more than 55% against, they don't have to vote on the ban, which is ridiculous because it's not the same vote. The vote in 2014 was, pot's completely illegal. Should we legalize it and have pot shops? Yes or no. But now the vote is, pot's legal. People in the county can plant it and grow it and harvest it and use it. They could possibly be selling it. So now that pot's legal, should we have pot shops and grows and licenses? Now that pot's legal and anyone can grow it and sell it on the corner, surreptitiously, illegally, do we want to disincentivize that by providing a retail outlet in our county? It's a different question now. But unfortunately, those eastern counties won't get a chance to vote on that question. Now, the western counties will, and right now, Golden Leaf Holdings, This story in the Seattle Times talks about how they paid $3.3 million for 100 acres in Marion County. Now, Marion County is the county that holds Salem. Salem is the city that is our capital city. And Bo Whitney from Golden Leaf says, quote, that the county passed a ban on any sort of marijuana licensing in unincorporated areas. And, of course, where they had bought their 100 acres is in one of these unincorporated areas. So Golden Leaf and a bunch of these companies are now looking at the vote coming in about 50 Oregon towns and cities, towns and counties, excuse me, that will be deciding whether or not the licensing can take place within their borders. There's a lot of money on the line in this local election, and every single one of these bans means jobs, means economic development that is not happening in these counties.
Well, excuse me!
It seems like a pretty simple vote to me if you're in a rural county and you're looking at a recovery that's gone mostly to the top 1%, hasn't hit the people in the rural areas much at all. I think you'd be clamoring for jobs and tax revenue and reduction in crime. Well, it'll happen eventually. Happy 420, Mountain Time Zone. We're back right after this.
Next to THC and CBD, you can now add CBR to your cannabis vernacular. CBR as in cannabisradio.com.
Mindful of sustainable practices and limiting their environmental footprint, Sansal Hemp is always grown outdoors, as nature intended. By starting with uniform genetic profiles, Sansal ensures the plant will maintain its optimal performance and yield consistently throughout its life cycle. It is through innovative processes that Sansal is able to achieve pure whole hemp extracts and meet industry requirements and the level of quality desired by many of their customers. Healthy plants, healthy people. SansalCBD.com. Improve your lifestyle naturally.
I'm Radical Russ from the Russ Belleville Show.
Washington, it has passed. The news organizations are calling it.
So they just did call it officially for 64.
Tell everybody in the red states how great legal weed is. Yeah, looking forward to legal weed here in the state of Oregon.
It's the Russ Belleville Show, the NPR of POT, weekdays live at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, exclusively on CannabisRadio.com.
Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals, or at least they pay me to say that. A public service message from CannabisRadio.com and the Russ Belleville Show.
Coming soon to a city near you, Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. Get all your cannabis accounting, legal, and compliance questions answered by their knowledgeable panel of industry experts who want to help your cannabis business boom. Whether you're a grower, dispensary operator, or a newcomer to the field, your cannabis business needs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. For information on upcoming events, visit CannabisFinanceBootcamp.com.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Today in Drug War Data Mining, the story is up from the Washington Post, and it's entitled, Here's What America Would Be Like with Legal Pot. And Keith Humphreys is reporting this, and he's got a great background in this. He's a professor of psychiatry at Stanford and has done a lot of reporting on drug issues. Kind of the neutral type as well, not for, not against, just trying to provide the facts. And I thought some of the facts that he presented in this piece deserved a little discussion. First of all, he opens with Carl Sagan. You can never go wrong opening with Carl Sagan, although he mentions something Carl Sagan never said. His first line says, Carl Sagan was famous for intoning about billions and billions when describing how many stars, galaxies, and planets existed in the cosmos. I've read everything Carl Sagan's ever written. I've heard all his interviews. And that was one of the things he always laughed about, was that while he said the word billions a lot, he never actually said billions and billions as the phrase. Kind of like, you know, play it again, Sam, was never actually said in Casablanca, but that's the way everyone remembers it. But anyway, the first fact that he brings up and the reason he mentions billions and billions is to talk about the aggregate marijuana smoking in America. And this is an interesting stat. He says, in aggregate, Americans report smoking pot about 4 billion days a year. Obviously, there's 365 days a year. What they're saying is, you know, you add up the guy who smokes twice a year, and then you add up me smokes 365 days a year, and then you add up all of us, and you end up with 4 billion days per year. And he says, of course, that this is probably an undercount. The true total's probably closer to 10 billion aggregate days per year. Now, that stat in and of itself doesn't tell us much, but when you compare it to some other data, you can start to draw some conclusions. And the first one he draws is that the risks of being arrested for smoking pot are extremely low. Now, he brings up that police made 620,000 arrests for marijuana possession in 2014. I think the 2015 number was 580,000, something like that. And it works out to about one arrest every minute. But he then takes that number and compares it to the aggregate smoking days by saying, you know, the 620,000, you divide that by the 4 billion possible days where someone could have gotten busted smoking pot, and it works out to a very low chance. He says, a person who smokes pot once a week faces an average risk of one arrest every 125 years. And he also says, for every marijuana possession arrest in 2014, a person, an American reported using pot for almost 6,500 days. This is a variation on Kevin Sibet's old line about, you know, you had to smoke 12,000 joints before you finally get arrested for it, right? And this is to try to minimize. This idea is to minimize what the harm is from marijuana prohibition and to try to say, oh, we don't really need to legalize it. There's just a 1 in 1,000 chance. There's a 1 in 300 chance, whatever it might be, whatever they say it is, this chance that you might get arrested. Well, of course, it's easy to diminish this when you're talking about the guy who smokes once a week who might get the 101 arrest every 125 years, or the person who only faces the risk after 12,000 joints, unless you're that guy smoking 12,000 joints, unless you're that person smoking more than once a week, and especially if you're younger, if you're tattooed, if you got long hair, you got dark skin, you got a lower socioeconomic class, then of course those odds go way, 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 way up. So citing some aggregate figure for the generic pot smoker doesn't really tell us much. Another thing that he points out is that marijuana use almost never contributes to suicide or homicide. Again, this is where this is the good side of that aggregate smoking days figure, the 4 billion smoking days, is that when a Kevin Sibet pops up and says, oh my God, there's been, you know, a doubling of kids getting into the marijuana gummies, or there's been an increase in how many, or who is it, Christine Tatum, who says, oh, this guy, you know, he went psycho and he killed somebody because he was on pot. Folks, if there's 4 billion days worth of pot smoking going on there, and the best you can do is bring up 1, 2, or 3 anecdotes, then you're not talking about a huge risk. I mean, here's what Humphrey's right. He says, even if a 1 in 250,000 risk of marijuana use causing someone to commit homicide would translate into more marijuana-caused homicides than there are homicides in the United States. This implies that even if marijuana use can truly cause suicidal homicidal behavior, the needed combination of factors is as rare as hen's teeth. With 4 billion smoking days and 31 million people smoking, then if it were any sort of cause of murder and mayhem, we'd see a whole lot more murder and mayhem. I mean, apply that to anything. You know, when they talk about it's going to cause more auto wrecks. Really? 31 million people smoking 4 billion days a year. We ought to just have nothing but crashes and mayhem and blood on the freeways by this point. And finally, the last part that he adds in here is a key impact of pot legalization will be an increase in how much time Americans spend stoned. He points out that the prices plummet when marijuana is legalized, and marijuana use is rising by about 10% a year. He says this is astonishing. And for it to increase, the American population has to smoke more often. An annual increase of 1 billion hours a year or more. He's talking about this. He asks, is adding 1 billion hours of pot intoxication every year good or bad for the country? Well, again, we've already had this massive amount of pot smoking, and we don't see a whole bunch of problems from it. Jonathan Calkins points out that half of the marijuana use is by people that are heavy chronic users, many of whom might have a disorder, But we saw that data from last week that showed since 2002, the rate of marijuana use disorders has stayed stable at 1.5% of the population. These folks have got a whole bunch of solutions in search of problems that don't exist. All right, we're back with Dr. Mitch and your calls right after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Keep your cannabis cravings under control. Feed your mind with CannabisRadio.com.
While the feds and state are doing their dance, you still need to transact business and manage your cash. Go professional and let your customers pay with PayQuick. They pay you and they earn rewards points. PayQuick connects to your bank account for free and secures all of your transactions. And with PayQuick, you can pay your producers and processors for free. Plus, it pays to have it because it makes depositing your cash safe and so easy. No cops, no crooks, just compliance and comfort, knowing you have your cannabis business in check with PayQuick. PayQuick, the safe and easy way to pay. PayQuick.com.
Our daughter Rebecca could have a seizure at any given time that could take her life.
When you have 200 seizures a day, she gets so scared.
I've learned a lot about the benefits of medical marijuana in the treatment of intractable epilepsy in children. We feel her saying to us, Mom, Dad,
help me.
When is this going to stop? Why don't you, my parents who love me, do something? And we can't.
Please help us help our daughter.
Our daughter Rebecca needs all options for medical marijuana, so please vote yes on Amendment 2.
Get the latest updates on the Russ Belville Show by following Radical Russ on Twitter and liking the Russ Belville Show on Facebook.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs, and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics, Herbie Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pens the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Time for our weekly visit with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in SUNY Albany. How you doing, Dr. Mitch? Oh, Mitch, can you hear us okay? Still trying to get to connect. Oh, there he is. There you are. I had to get the right thing to... Can you hear me?
Oh, good. Okay. Can you hear me?
We finally got it. I was off on the road, and things get reset sometimes, so glad to have you here. And we're just... 22 days away from the election, Dr. Mitch, what are you thinking about this upcoming vote?
I'm thinking about writing in Russ Belville.
That's right. The campaign starts today.
I don't know if you're approved in this state, but we could really use those electoral votes for you.
Yeah, yeah. So. I'm hoping I can take New York. Yeah, okay. Folks, want to remind you, our phone line's open at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565. And we'll see if the folks out in the audience can hear you now. So much to get fixed, and there's so many topics for us to discuss, Dr. Mitch, so let's just get right to it. First of all, we have this study that had come across about weed and sleep, asking, does weed help you sleep? And these researchers are saying it probably isn't helpful. It's kind of a surprise to me. What can you tell us about this?
Well, what's curious is it's probably strain dependent. What a surprise. The actual onset of sleep seems to be improved with both high CBD and even high THC strains, but we're not always getting the exact amount of REM sleep we would love to get, that rapid eye movement sleep that's supposedly covarying with dream time. We do see when folks use regularly days and days and days and then don't use, they often have a bit of REM rebound. They often take more of that stage of sleep when they sleep that night. So it's still a little early to decide, but we are seeing a lot of folks report a lot of improvement. It may actually be in part from some of the terpenes that we know and love, particularly those wild aromas and flavors that seem to come that may actually be independent of THC or CBD.
Yeah, it really surprised me because, you know, I'm not one to say that my cannabis use is for medical purposes, but if I were, I would point to my insomnia. I used to be one of these. I could never sleep when I was a kid. My brain wouldn't turn off, and I find a couple of smoke puffs on a joint, and boom, I go to sleep right away. So we'll keep our eye on this kind of stuff. All right, let's get to this other one, a study that's showing a possible negative effect of medical cannabis laws. Particularly, they're talking about educational outcomes and people being more likely to get GEDs. This kind of sounds like it's got some confounding problems. Could you explain to our listeners?
So, as you can imagine, the idea that medical marijuana states might have folks have a number of people who end up choosing a GED rather than a high school diploma would be obviously confounded because they're just not randomly assigned. We're not saying here you at random become a state that has medical marijuana law and you that don't. The longitudinal look is going to have to be done in order to really get a feel for is there even a chance of this being causal. But I feel like this more than anything just says, hey, states that really need and understand medical cannabis may be the ones where folks may not take the standard path to a high school diploma because they have plans for tech education, going into business themselves, something along those lines. It's just a little early to tell. I think the thing we should do is just randomly assign medical marijuana laws to 25 of the states, and 25 more would have to lose them.
There we go. And what about the impact of the prohibition itself? I mean, I know my career path was, you know, derailed because of drug testing. I would refuse to take a drug test, and that kept me out a lot of the better jobs, or the same kind of effect with people in education, wouldn't it be?
Sad but true. It can also interfere with some of the funding for college education, and so a decrease in educational attainment may be more a product of prohibition than any kind of cannabis use itself. Good point, man.
We've got another study to look at, more good news studies coming out. This one on cannabis inhalation improving folks that have Parkinson's disease. Maybe tell folks a little bit what Parkinson's is and what this study is showing us.
Well, so Parkinson's oddly seems to work in the dopaminergic system, and it's that sort of uncontrollable shaking. We've seen a number of famous people have it and come out in support of some of the research for it. The impact of at least some cannabis strains on the jitteriness and the actual, unintentional movement is dramatic and rapid. Really, I got to admit, kind of moving to watch. And it's not crystal clear what the mechanism is because we don't usually think of cannabis as a dopaminergic drug. Maybe downstream somewhere you'd see some modest changes in dopamine production after the cannabinoid receptors are targeted. And it's teaching us not only how to help these folks, but scratching our heads a little bit about the mechanism, and we're learning a little more about the brain.
It's fascinating research going on. And of course, folks will know some famous Parkinson's sufferers. Michael J. Fox, of course, the late Muhammad Ali suffered from Parkinson's. The more we can learn about this and provide some help for these folks, oh, that would be some fantastic, fantastic breakthroughs. Our next study that's up to talk about suggests that cannabis could treat cervical cancer. What is this, like the 19th, 20th different cancer we found some promising results for, doctor?
So this is pretty wild. And I mean, cervical cancer does not lend itself to the more straightforward, easy interventions. The surgeries can't be particularly easy. The radiation targeting can be cumbersome, and the chemotherapy just ends up wiping people out all the way. So it's also something we'd rather not do. We really are seeing enough consistent decrease in tumor size in response to the cannabinoids now that I'm starting to wonder if there's a cancer that cannabis wouldn't help. And I take a lot of hope in this. And I feel like until we get, better prevention on something like this, we got to make this our you know, another key to the armament against this disabling disease.
And with cervical cancer, haven't we recently found over the past 5 years that the human papilloma virus has a lot to do with this? And there's some controversy about getting, you know, prepubescent women, girls inoculated for it.
So it's been kind of strange. The move has been that HPV was increasing risk for this cancer, and the effect isn't huge, but big enough to make it seem like preventing this would certainly have that advantage. Anytime you vaccinate, folks are often concerned and not particularly eager to jump in there until we've got some longitudinal data, but we have evidence suggesting it's really worth it. It is a painful shot and one that my daughter has complained about, but the process seems to be worth it, and I decided to go ahead and do it with my kids.
Well, that sounds great, and that controversy over it kind of bothers me, because what they try to say is, oh, if you give these young, you know, preteen girls, it's kind of encouraging them to go out and have sex. So what? The alternative is, hey, if you do, go ahead and get cancer. I just don't understand that thinking. All right, let's get...
That's such an obtuse argument. I couldn't even encode it.
All right, and we've got another study here, and this one's a first that I've ever heard about. Heavy cannabis use may increase the risk of osteoporosis. And again, that's the bone disorder. What do you make of this one?
So they're getting a little ahead of themselves on this, but basically there was a subset of really heavy users. It was literally over 5,000 lifetime uses, something like that. And they had a 5% decrease in bone density and modest reports of increased fractures or bone problems along those lines. It was such a strange way to kind of cut the data up. I feel like we shouldn't make too much of this until it replicates. The mechanism doesn't quite make sense to me, but they have done this in some animal studies where, again, really heavy doses at frequent administrations did seem to alter bone density in some rodents. So we'll all just have to be super careful about, you know, chewing our Tums and making sure we're keeping our calcium intake high.
All right. And we've got a question coming from our chat room. Daniel is in Florida, and he's, of course, looking forward to the Amendment 2 passing in November, and asks about his dad, who is suffering from Alzheimer's disease. Just wants to know some basics on what you would recommend for dosing, how to get his father interested in it, what things to avoid. How could he help with cannabis and Alzheimer's?
What's curious is we really don't have a lot of human trials except those that show that it would certainly help his dad keep his weight up, keep his appetite good, and keep his mood good. And those tend to be things that make things easier on caregivers and improve longevity, particularly keeping the weight reasonable. I imagine a vaporized dose that's extremely small, or a tincture that, again, is a really small dose, and start low and slow. See how his dad reacts and go from there. The animal literature is pretty impressive about neuroprotective effects. We haven't actually seen somebody have Alzheimer's reversed, so I'd love it if he could be the first one.
Yeah, that would be great. And I'll add my two cents on this as well. The last thing to offer is any sort of smoked marijuana for older, you know, elderly people. You show them that vape pen. You show them a nice little vape pen, or, you know, get them into tinctures or these topicals, especially. It breaks down that barrier, that fear they've got of it being, you know, pot. Oh my God. All right, let's get one. We've got time for one more here, but before we go, let's remind you that if you got a question you'd like to keep private and personal, you can always send it directly to Dr. Mitch Earlywine through 420research@gmail.com, 420research@gmail.com. And we got another question from the chat room. Jerry is in our chat room, and I just happen to know that Jerry's blind. We've been corresponding back and forth, and he says, I've got a question. I get very serious headaches from my eyes. My eyes are deteriorating in the back of my head, and I want to know what I can do to alleviate the headache using edibles.
Well, again, the opportunity would be to find a strain that you know has those analgesic effects, and rather than, you know, try to wait for a headache to get really bad and then eat an edible, you'll be way too far behind it. As soon as you notice the least bit of a symptom, start with a really small dose and see if you can kind of cut it off at the pass. We've seen that with the migraine literature too, where if somebody can run to the vaporizer as soon as they get those flashes that often precede the migraine, they can get ahead of it and then have a much easier time, much shorter duration, and much lower intensity.
All right. Well, that's about all the time we've got to speak with Dr. Mitch today. But if you missed the beginning or have questions you want to get in, you can always join us next week, every Monday here on the Russ Belville Show. And don't forget to check out CannabisRadio.com for Dr. Mitch's podcast, Burning Issues. It's available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Thanks, Dr. Mitch, and we'll talk to you next week and see you later.
Have a great one.
All right, stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to talk about TV's quack, Dr. Oz spreading junk science to discredit marijuana legalization. Got a few things to say about that.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
From dabs to chivas, sativas to indicas, we roll out a whole concentrate of fresh new content every week. It's like going from the greenhouse to the dispensary. CannabisRadio.com.
Play as Ted Growing, expelled botany sophomore and the biggest grower in town, only on Weed Firm Replanted. Available on the App Store and Google Play.
It's a lot of work being the biggest grower in town. Maintaining a room full of plants while dealing with a slew of eccentric customers, from a hardcore partier to the curious neighbor next door.
Is anybody home?
Help me expand my bud business by unlocking new strains, customizing my grow room, and completing challenges that you can't get enough of. Grow your empire so big you can see it from space. Low on funds? Don't worry. Weed Firm Replanted is free to download.
Download Weed Firm Replanted for free on the App Store and Google Play today. Get growing, Mr. Growing.
Hello and welcome all you high-flying, die-trying, roll-a-Philly-blunt-for-your-friend-hemsters, every roach-smoking bong token, however you get your THC can-enthusiasts, all you rebels, individualistic originals, and outside-the-box ganja warriors, you chunky monkey, Cherry Garcia, munchy-loving hemsters, all you captive earth surfers, astral travelers, and ganja-loving connoisseurs, all you high-flying, wide-smiling, ganja-rific cannabophiles, welcome to everyone except Donald Trump supporters, because that's how I really feel.
The Grow Show with Kyle Cushman, only on CannabisRadio.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Today on The Rant, we're going to talk about Dr. Mehmet Oz. You know Dr. Oz, he's the TV quack that had Donald Trump on the other day to prove that he's medically fit by showing a single-page typed letter from another quack. Yeah, this is the guy who promotes Reiki. You know what Reiki is? You know where they put their hands over you and they can move your energies? Mm-hmm. He's promoted numerous unproven snake oil cures that got him called in front of Congress, in front of the FTC, and berated for being a quack. And he is the co-author of this article that I saw over the weekend entitled Marijuana. Is there a responsible way to approach its increasing use? And this thing's a syndicated article. It's probably all over the country. I found it in the health and fitness section of the Idaho Statesman. I still get the paper from my, or the feed, I should say, from my hometown birthplace newspaper there. And in this 652-word piece, they managed to cram in 10 different ways to undermine support for medical marijuana. And one every 65 words. And if you thought Dr. Oz was batshit crazy when he was promoting seances with the dead for stress relief and pushing unproven magic coffee bean weight loss cures, or interviewing Charlie Sheen about the virus in goat's milk that cured his AIDS, man, wait till you hear his opinions on medical marijuana. First of all, the seriousness with which Dr. Oz treats the marijuana issue is revealed in the opening denigrating pot pun lines. Like, facts about its risks and benefits seem harder to come by than a sober fan at a Willie Nelson concert. Or the warning that some think it can send your health up in smoke. And the advice, don't go one toke over the line. Well, the jokes about pot aren't as troubling as Dr. Oz and his co-author, Dr. Michael Roizen. This guy, Roizen, he's the chief wellness officer of the Cleveland Clinic, which also sells Reiki energy services. These two are irresponsibly spreading junk science and misinformation to discredit marijuana in literally every paragraph of this piece. Here's an excerpt from the piece. Quote, more than 31 million U.S. adults smoke marijuana, and almost 8.5 million use pot a lot, according to a recent study published in The Lancet Psychiatry. Somewhere around 1.2 million folks in 24 states have authorized prescriptions for medical marijuana. End quote. Doc, nobody has a prescription for medical marijuana. It is a Schedule I drug, and prescriptions cannot be written for it. Doctors ought to know this because they have to abide by the DEA's prescription regulations regarding dangerous medicines that, unlike marijuana, can actually kill you. Instead, what you're talking about are the millions of patients in half the country already that have physicians' recommendations to use marijuana for medical purposes. And recommendations don't protect you for shit. A prescription would protect these patients' medical information under federal HIPAA laws. A prescription would allow health insurance to cover the cost of the medicine. A prescription would prevent employers, landlords, governments, firearms dealers, courts, and law enforcement from abridging these patients' civil rights. So let's get the terminology correct. It's been, what, 20 years now? Here's another excerpt. Quote, ironically, the more folks smoke pot, the increase since 2002 is about 30%, the less people believe it delivers real physical and psychological risks. End quote. Doc, there's nothing ironic about fewer people finding pot use risky these days. Think about where we set the baseline. In 2002, the baseline was set when there was only 8 medical marijuana states. And they'd been open at most 6 years by that time. That's California, but 6 years, 4 years for Oregon and Washington, Alaska, a couple years for Denver or for Colorado and Nevada. The Bush administration at the time was telling us that marijuana leads to terrorism, that pot had become 20 times stronger than the Woodstock era, and that if your kid finds his dad's stash, he's going to pull out a gun and shoot his friends. So, yeah, people might have thought pot was risky back then. 14 years later, people are starting to understand a more accurate perception of marijuana's risks after generations of reefer madness propaganda. People now know that marijuana is safer than alcohol and tobacco. People now know that marijuana is incapable of creating a fatal overdose. And people now know that marijuana can be used for medical purposes. They've seen 25 states with it already. They've seen 4 states legalize all adult use. And those states are seeing tremendous benefits, and the sky hasn't fallen. And while all of that is kind of, you know, a problem, you know, trying to distort this decrease in risk perception when what it really is people getting over reefer madness. That's not even the most egregious part of this paragraph. The most egregious omission comes from the fact that they're using this Lancet study to tell you 31 million people toke, that 8.5 million toke a lot, that toking's increased 30%, and that risk perception has dramatically declined. They've given you 4 out of 5 of the things this study found and failed to mention the fifth, the most important finding, that despite all of those changes they're trying to scare you about, there has been, quote, no increase in marijuana use disorders, 1.5%, end quote. Yeah, people think it's less risky, but the same number of people get addicted to it. Use has gone way up, but the same number of people are getting addicted to it. Kind of blows that scare right out of the water, doesn't it? Here's another example. Quote, any smoke, be it from wood fire, a cigarette, or a joint, delivers toxins to the lungs. Inhaling deeply and holding your breath when smoking marijuana increases exposure. Researchers from Health Canada found sidestream secondhand marijuana smoke with more carcinogenic polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons than secondhand tobacco smoke. End quote. Okay, yes. Exposure to the smoke from burning vegetable matter of any type does contain toxins and carcinogens. But these doctors are using scary words that imply danger while leaving out the important information that debunks the danger. We've already covered the fact that nobody dies from a marijuana overdose, so the use of the word toxic is a little inappropriate. And marijuana smoke does contain carcinogens, but that doesn't mean that marijuana smoke causes cancer. Just like H2O, water, right? H2O. Well, it's got 2 explosive hydrogen atoms. Hydrogen's explosive. And it's got 1 oxygen atom. My God, oxygen is what's necessary to start fires. But that doesn't mean that water burns. Chemistry matters, Doc. And the chemistry in marijuana smoke matters. The delta-9 THC molecules that are among those carcinogens you're talking about seem to prevent the smoke from causing cancer. Even among the tokers who are inhaling deeply and holding their breath, there is no association at all between their marijuana use and head, neck, and lung cancers. That was discovered by Dr. Donald Tashkin 10 years ago after studying 30 years worth of data. And he went into the data hoping to find the link. He's not a pot guy. He was looking to prove what he believed, that it would cause cancer, and found the opposite. Thank God he had the honesty and intellectual credibility to stand by his findings. Here's another one, number 5, or 5th out of 10 paragraphs. I mean, I'm telling you, it's amazing. Number 5, here's a quote. Hydrocarbons also contribute to inflammation throughout your body, including in your joints, your back, your arteries, and your brain. You may actually increase the pain from which you're seeking relief. End quote. All right, folks. Number 1, when you're smoking pot, it's self-titrating. You can tell what effect it's having on you. So if it were causing inflammation and the pain was not subsiding, you'd know it. But chronic pain is the number 1 condition for which patients get their recommendations. We've seen that it reduces the side effects of opioid painkillers. We see fewer opioids prescribed and fewer opioid overdose deaths. But even if there was inflammation from the smoking, there's vaporization, there's edibles, there's tinctures, there's topicals. You could mention those. I don't know, maybe Dr. Oz just thinks it's better for people to pay for an office visit every month to renew a pain prescription they could get addicted and killed by. I don't know why he wouldn't tell people to just grow a cheap, safe house plant. Maybe they wouldn't visit him as, oh. That's all the time we got for today, but we'll finish this rant up in hour 2. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers. Hey, hey, hey,
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at radicalrus.com. You're taking seeds, you're planting, you're growing, you're dying, you're